This is Ronald Coleman, inviting you to radio's most dramatic half hour, Favorite Story. Favorite story you're about to hear is something which you will never forget. It was chosen for you by a woman who is a keen judge of unforgettable stories, the co-director of the Theatre Guild, Miss Teresa Helburn. Under Miss Helburn's guidance, the Theatre Guild has brought the American stage some of its greatest triumphs. Oklahoma, Carousel, the Eugene O'Neill plays, the hit productions of Helen Hayes, Alfred Lunt, and Lynn Fontanne. So, when Miss Helburn chose a favorite story, we knew it would be a good one. Perhaps the most dramatic short story ever written in America. To star in this famous dramatization, we called upon one of the theater's best young leading men. You remember him for his distinguished portrayal of the title role in The Little Minister, and as the sergeant in Broadway's Voice of the Turtle. Now, I'm going to let him tell you something about this favorite story. John Beale.
Thank you, Ronnie. First, let me say that it's a great honor to appear with you on this favorite story broadcast.
It's our pleasure, John.
Thank you. You know, Miss Helburn's favorite story is an old favorite of mine, too. It's The Man Without a Country by Edward Everett Hale. The story of the unfortunate Philip Nolan, a young American lieutenant who forfeited his right to have a home or a country.
All right, John, we're all eagerly awaiting your performance as Philip Nolan. So we'll raise the curtain on Teresa Helburn's favorite story, Act One. This is a legend, this story of the man without a country. A legend of the early days of the American Republic, when each new year saw more and more stars added to her flag. When the pioneer spirit was at its fullest flood, and when the coast of California was as remote and strange as the South Pole is today. In those days, when the veterans of 1776 were not yet gray about the temples, a young man boarded the American corvette, the Intrepid. He wore the uniform of a lieutenant in the United States Navy, with one singular exception. The buttons of his uniform were plain. They did not bear the familiar seal of the United States of America.
Mr. Nolan?
Yes, sir?
Welcome to the Intrepid.
Thank you, Captain.
A stateroom has been prepared for you, Mr. Nolan. I shall be pleased to have you dine at my table this evening.
I'm honored, sir. But I find this rather difficult to understand. Am I not a prisoner?
The Secretary of the Navy has given me explicit orders concerning the treatment to be accorded you, Mr. Nolan.
I see.
You are to suffer no indignity. You are to be treated at all times as an officer and a gentleman.
Well, that's very generous, Captain. Am I to understand, then, that I am subject to no punishment whatsoever?
No punishment, Mr. Nolan, save that which you yourself have asked for. Did you find the dinner satisfactory, Mr. Nolan?
Faultless, sir. I enjoyed it immensely.
It is my feeling that a good story always tops off a fine meal. Does anyone feel in a storytelling mood? Lieutenant Masterson.
Yes, sir?
Would you favor us with an account of one of your adventures?
I should be honored, Captain. During my second year at the Naval Academy, I was taking my holidays at a small fishing village along the New England coast of the United States.
One moment, Lieutenant.
Yes, sir?
When Mr. Nolan is present at our table, the country whose name you have just mentioned does not exist. You find this amusing, Mr. Nolan?
I find it a farce, Captain. Do you seriously propose to carry out this ridiculous court-martial? Do you consider it a punishment, sir, to snip off the buttons from my uniform and stop your lieutenants from telling me dull stories of their holiday adventures? It's absurd. Preposterous. Do you know why I was sentenced, gentlemen? Do you know the circumstances, Captain?
I know only the orders which have been forwarded to me from Washington.
I'll tell you then. I am condemned as a man without a country. Because I had the courage to follow a great man.
Who, sir?
Senator Aaron Burr.
A traitor, sir.
I denounce any man who calls Aaron Burr a traitor. He was my friend. He had a dream of building our nation into something beyond a flimsy federation of backward states.
Sir.
Aaron Burr would have given us the strength of steel. And I pledged him my loyalty, gentlemen, to build an empire.
What did we fight our revolution for, Mr. Nolan? Was it not to free ourselves from the chains of empire?
Well, what do we have instead? A government of farmers and shopkeepers and men like Aaron Burr, who were born to rule, are cast out by this government.
All men are born equal, Mr. Nolan. No men are born to rule, not even Aaron Burr.
I suggest that we adjourn to our staterooms, gentlemen.
No, wait. I beg you, Captain. I must finish my story. Just picture me, if you will, on trial as a traitor. A court-martial finds me guilty. And do you know what I told this court-martial?
We do not wish to know, Mr. Nolan.
I said it once and I repeat it now. Curse these United States. I wish I may never hear of the United States again.
Your wish has become the sentence of the court, Mr. Nolan. I have been solemnly instructed in the name of President Jefferson to prevent you from seeing or hearing any intelligence from your native land. All of the officers at this table are under oath to help me carry out this order. Shall we retire, gentlemen?
This atlas is incomplete. The maps of Europe are accurate enough, but on our side of the world, this book only shows Canada and the Spanish territories.
I believe certain pages have been removed, Mr. Nolan, in accordance with the ruling of the court-martial.
So, they're serious about this thing, aren't they, Masterson? And so distressingly thorough.
That is the tradition of the service, sir.
I know. I've not been permitted to receive letters from that country, or to send any. I'm never allowed to see a newspaper which hasn't been cut to shreds by some censor. And now my own atlas has been shorn of its United States. Am I to be denied all contact with my homeland?
It is my understanding that you did not want a homeland.
Oh, see here, Masterson, this is really quite childish. Look, you're a reasonable man. Let me borrow your atlas.
I'm sorry, Mr. Nolan.
Well, at least give me some occasional bits of news from home.
I'm under orders. That would be violating my honor as an officer in the service of the United... of that country.
Then, Masterson, will you please have the goodness to be... to be my friend?
Yes, sir. That I will be, Mr. Nolan. And gladly.
I'm surprised, Captain, that you let the prisoner come ashore.
You are not a prisoner, Mr. Nolan. You never have been a prisoner. Have a good time here in Naples. Enjoy yourself, Nolan.
Thank you, sir.
Of course, I must ask that at all times you remain in the company of one of our ship's officers.
And yet you say I'm not a prisoner? May I have as my companion Lieutenant Masterson? He's the least objectionable of my jailers.
I shall ask him to join you. Will you excuse me now, Mr. Nolan? I have the next dance with Lady Hamilton.
My congratulations, Captain. I beg your pardon, madam.
Yes?
Aren't you... Oh, no, it's not possible.
What's not possible, Lieutenant?
You are. Miss Rutledge of Savannah, Georgia.
I'm not Miss Rutledge any longer. I'm Mrs. Grant. Have we had the pleasure of meeting?
Yes, many years ago at an officer's ball in Vicksburg. I'm Philip Nolan.
You are Philip Nolan.
I hope you haven't forgotten me. May I have the honor of dancing with you?
Well, I shall be pleased.
Thank you, madam. Tell me, Mrs. Graff, we hear so little news on shipboard. What do you hear from home?
Home, Mr. Nolan?
Yes, yes, I'm hungry for news. I could read it in the papers, of course, or in letters, or in dispatches, but I want to hear it from you. Mrs. Graff, what is the news from the United States?
Is there such a country?
So they've told you, too. They've told everyone.
But, Mr. Nolan, I thought you were the man who never wanted to hear home again.
Thank you, madam, for complying so rigidly with my request. So that's why there's been no talk of home tonight. No flags in this ballroom. No Virginia Reel, no Old 13. Well, I shall spare you, all of you, the discomfort and embarrassment of catering to my requirements. Ladies and gentlemen, stop the music! Officers and ladies all, listen to me. I am sorry to have inconvenienced you by my presence here at this ball. I am sorry that because Philip Nolan has been among you, it's been necessary for you to refrain from discussing subjects which must be very dear to your hearts, as they are to mine. It will no longer be necessary for you to pretend that that country does not exist. You can talk of it, sing its songs, tell each other of its news. I am returning to my ship. You will no longer be plagued with the presence of the man without a country. Lieutenant Masterson?
Yes, Mr. Nolan.
We should be coming to home port soon, shouldn't we?
Well, the ship will be in port on Thursday. However, we have a rendezvous at sea first with the corvette Warren.
For what purpose?
To disembark a passenger.
Philip Nolan?
Philip Nolan.
I've counted the weeks and months that our sails have been set for the waters of that country. And now, when its very shoreline hangs just below the ridge of the sea, I find I am not going home. All others go home, to family and friends, but not Nolan.
You mustn't brood over these things, Philip. I have a new volume of poems here.
I'm not interested in poems.
By Sir Walter Scott. I know you like his writing. Read me some of these verses, Philip. You read them so well.
I know none of these. I can't read them.
Well, they'll take your mind off your troubles, Philip. Open the book at random. I'm sure we'll find Scott with something worthwhile to say.
All right, all right. Here. This is from the Lay of the Last Minstrel.
An interesting title.
Canto 5. Breathes there a man with soul so dead, who never to himself hath said, this is my own, my native land, whose heart hath ne'er within him burned, as home his footsteps he hath turned from wandering on a foreign strand. If such there breathe, go, mark him well, for him no minstrel's raptures swell. High though his titles, proud his name, boundless his wealth as wish can claim, despite these titles, power and pelf, the wreck consented all himself. Great God. How long, Masterson? How long?
If you will, a century or more, to the days of sailing ships and horse-drawn carriages. For that is the era of our favorite story, chosen by Teresa Helburn of the Theatre Guild. It's Edward Everett Hale's The Man Without a Country, starring John Beale as Philip Nolan, with William Conrad as Masterson. years came and went, and Philip Nolan, Lieutenant Plain Buttons, was shunted from one outbound ship of the United States Navy to another. His hair turned iron gray. He touched 100 foreign ports. But not once did he catch sight of the country of his youth. No news of it reached him, except indirectly.
One thing I've been curious about, Captain Wilkes.
Yes, Mr. Nolan?
When I was a young man, I used to visit the Texas country. I roped cattle there with my older brother. It's a fine piece of land down there, the Italy of our continent. What's happening with that part of the Spanish territory?
Mr. Nolan, Texas is out of the map, as far as you are concerned.
Out of the map? As far as I'm concerned? Oh, I see. Our country must be growing, sir. It must be growing.
There are countless legends told of Philip Nolan, how he manned a gun in a battle with an enemy man of war during the conflict of 1812. He's mentioned by name in the dispatches of that encounter. How he helped a boatload of lost savages to return to their African homeland, while he himself had no homeland to which he might return. Another legend reports that Philip Nolan came face to face with Aaron Burr in one of his Atlantic crossings. And Nolan is said to have condemned him in the fiercest language as a traitor to his country. Many a kind-hearted skipper sent his plea to officials in Washington, urging that Philip Nolan be pardoned, but nothing ever came of it. Old Plain Buttons grew older. His hair changed from gray to white, but he endured his punishment with silence and dignity. And when in the spring of 1863, Masterson and Nolan found themselves face to face, it was a touching reunion.
Masterson! Masterson!
Huh? No. No, it can't be.
You don't recognize an old friend. Have the years changed me so much?
Yeah, the years change all of us, Mr. Nolan. You'll notice I have my white thatch, too.
Am I to be your guest for this voyage?
Yeah, that is the plan, Philip. I'm a captain now. Have my own ship.
Splendid, splendid.
Yeah, how long has it been, Nolan, since that first voyage?
I don't know exactly. A billion waves have come and gone. A million clouds have crossed my sky. 10,000 suns have risen and set. More than that, actually. Salt water has been my home for 50 years.
Philip, you know I appealed directly to the president.
I'm deeply grateful. But their punishments have taught me this, Masterson. If I were a young man again, I would give my life, my every breath, to the service of my country.
Captain Masterson.
Yes, what is it?
Mr. Nolan, sir. Old Plain Buttons. He's been calling for you from his stateroom.
What?
I think there's something wrong with him. I think he's very sick.
Oh, has the doctor been in to see him?
Well, you know how he is, sir. He won't let anyone come into his quarters. But now he's asking for you.
Take over, Ingham. I'm going to see him. Philip, are you all right?
Yes, I'm all right. Look about you. I know the light is dim, but you see, here in my stateroom, I have a country.
Yes, I see.
A picture of Washington and the flag. I've made that myself. And see the map with the eagle above it. I drew that, Masterson. I think it's rather good. Don't you?
I'll go get the doctor.
No, no. I want to be alone with you, sir. I want you to tell me something. Something of home. I'm dying, Masterson. Surely it can do no harm now.
Well...
No, no. There cannot be a man who loves the old flag as I do. Or prays for it as I do. There are 34 stars in it now, Masterson. I thank God for that. Although I don't know what their names are. There has never been one star taken away. I thank God for that. I know from that that there has never been any successful Aaron Burr. But tell me something. Tell me everything, Masterson, before I die.
Surely it can do no harm now, Philip. Where shall I begin?
Oh, bless you, bless you. What are the names? The new stars in the flag. The last I know is Ohio. My father lived in Kentucky. But I have guessed Michigan and Indiana and Mississippi. But where are the new ones? You haven't cut up any of the old ones, I hope.
No. No, they're all to the west, Philip.
To the west?
Uh-huh. Missouri, Illinois.
Illinois.
Iowa, Wisconsin.
Wisconsin. And what about Texas?
It is one of the stars on the flag.
Oh, I'm glad. I'm glad about Texas. It must be one of the biggest stars, huh? One of the biggest...
California is a state, too, Nolan. And Oregon, out on the Pacific coast.
From ocean to ocean. From sea to shining sea. Go on, go on.
Well, they've discovered gold in California.
Yes.
At Sutter's Mill. And there's a railroad almost all the way across the country now.
With steam engines on them, Masterson?
Yes.
That doesn't seem very practical to me. I've always been afraid those boilers would blow up.
And we have a telegraph now.
A telegraph?
Yes, a machine to send messages instantly across hundreds of miles.
It's impossible. How is it done?
With electricity.
Electricity? Old Ben Franklin's plaything. They finally put it to use, did they? What else? What else? Whatever happened to Aaron Burr?
He's dead, sir. These many years.
In disgrace?
In obscurity.
As it should be. For him, obscurity would be worse than disgrace. And tell me, who is president now?
A man named Abraham Lincoln.
Lincoln? Oh, I know. That must be old General Benjamin Lincoln's son.
No, no. Abraham Lincoln was just a backwoods lawyer. He worked himself up from the ranks.
Good for him. I was worried about the danger of keeping up those regular successions of the first families. Abe Lincoln. I like the sound of his name. You know, Masterson, they've thought to keep me separated from any contact with my country. But they failed. Because, you see, my country is people. And I have always been close to the people of the United States of America. The sailors on our decks, and the officers like yourself, Masterson. You are America. And through knowing men like you, I have known my country. And known that all was well with her.
Philip. Philip, what's the matter?
I'm just getting sleepy. Before I go, open my Bible, where the bookmark is, and read me the text.
Of course, Philip. The They desire a country, even a heavenly one, wherefore God is not ashamed to be called their God. For he hath prepared for them a city.
Masterson, bury me in the sea. It's been my home, and I love it. But would you ask someone to set up a little stone for my memory? At Fort Adams, maybe? Or New Orleans? So that my disgrace may not be more than I ought to bear.
What shall it say, Philip?
Just say on it, in memory of Philip Nolan, lieutenant in the Army of the United States. He loved his country as no other man has loved her. But no man deserved less at her hand. I'm going home, Masterson. I'm going home.
Heard John Beale as Philip Nolan in the Favorite Story production of The Man Without a Country. My warmest congratulations to John Beale and all the cast and orchestra for a thrilling radio half hour. And our thanks to Miss Teresa Helbin, who chose The Man Without a Country as her own favorite story. Next week, one of the most beautiful and tragic stories of all history, Mary, Queen of Scots. It will star two very fine actresses indeed. Edna Best as Mary and Benita Hume as Elizabeth. You've seen Miss Best on the screen as the wife of the late George Apley and in dozens of other stage and screen roles. Benita Hume was a popular star of London's West End. And you may have heard her on the radio in this country with her husband, Jack Benny's neighbor, R. Coleman. Mary, Queen of Scots was chosen as the favorite story of the one and only Bing Crosby. We count this a red-letter radio play, so we hope you'll be listening.